Sometimes the nerve doesn't recover as quickly as usual. When the air is cold, your fingers get clumsy. That's because the fatty nerve coverings in your fingers start to thicken, much as greasy lamb's fat congeals after a meal. As a result, the sodium pumps within the nerves that go to your fingertips don't work as well as they do in warm weather. It's why we need to warm up before any task that requires fine motor control. Glenn Gould, the great pianist, was often restless before playing until he could find a deep sink or bucket where he could plunge his arms in hot water. Critics sometimes made fun of him, but then they heard the results. Once his congealing fat had softened, once the path for his electric-powering sodium ions was ready, Bach's masterpieces were his. Ice cubes help keep down the yelps in earlobe piercing for the same reason. Sometimes the problem is more serious than a gust of chilled air. The liquid called tetrodotoxin is one of the gravest nerve poisons that exists. When it splashes around a nerve, it acts on the sodium pumps, closing them tight. Were this to affect only a few nerves, such as the ones involved with our looking around, befuddled, to find the exact location of the TV remote control, that might not be too bad. But there's a great similarity in nerves throughout the body. As the tetrodotoxin seeps everywhere, the nerve signals traveling to the heart and lungs are affected as well. We might have some awareness of this, we might look down and quite sincerely want our nerves to keep firing, but with the sodium channels blocked and none of those booster ions falling in, the electrical signal would soon peter out. The result would be death by suffocation. Tetrodotoxin is produced in its natural state by the dreaded Japanese pufferfish and duplicated by eager chemical warfare specialists worldwide. Alcohol is a bit in between. It makes the fatty nerve membranes begin to congeal, but not enough for instant death. The result is more like cold finger fumbling, only this time the membrane disruption operates on nerve cells deep inside the brain, carrying our thoughts and memories rather than just in the extremities. For those who, as Samuel Johnson observed, wish to escape from themselves, it's consoling to temporarily weaken the walls that hold their electricity-boosting sodium pumps in place. Technology regularly advances faster than science, and people happily used alcohol and, if wise, avoided pufferfish for thousands of years before the details of sodium pumps were known. Early anesthetics were similar. They were greatly needed, for alcohol barely works in stopping surgical pain, and even into the mid-1800s, the big teaching hospitals had to employ burly grippers, such as ex-stevedores or boxers, whose job was to stride after escaping surgical patients and drag them back to the operating theater for their ordeal. Flaubert, son of a surgeon from this pre-anesthetics era, gruesomely described what surgery then meant in the leg amputation scene in Madame Bovary. The change with anesthetics came in the early and mid-1800s, when various helpful gases, such as ether, were found to knock out patients without too much fatality. Sigmund Freud, as a young medical student in the 1880s, was especially fond of experimenting with the properties of the modified plant extract called cocaine. It was excellent for eye operations and also pleasing for the surgeons who sampled it, often repeatedly, just to confirm that the doses were right. Only with the work of Hodgkin and Huxley was it clear, though, how anesthetics might work. Much as with alcohol, many of these molecules sink into the fatty membranes of our nerves and diminish the working of ion pumps along nerve axons whenever they arrive. Pliers might be savagely tugging at a molar, or a needle might stitch together pieces of living tissue, but the nerve impulses with which the brain would recognize these inequities will advance barely a fraction of an inch before, sodium boosters off, they dribble to a halt. As the details of how they work became known, and the different modes of action of general versus local anesthetics became clear, medicine improved tremendously. Serious operations such as heart bypasses became possible. Keyhole surgery on knees became possible to control. Victorian engineers had only big electric engines and used them to move elevators or to run machine tools or refrigerator pumps. Today's biological engineers can use the microscopic electrical pumps of sodium ions to control far more delicate maneuvers within. Hodgkin never got around to inebriating his squids, but colleagues did ply them with tetrodotoxin, which sounds unkind, but given that the nerves being used had been removed from the squid's body, the objection is perhaps moot. When they poured tetrodotoxin directly on nerves to stop the sodium entirely and then watched as it wore off, they could see exactly how the sodium pumps began to operate again. What they discovered was humbling to anyone who takes pride in our distance from tentacled, wide-eyed marine creatures. The mechanism was exactly the same as in humans. Considering, Hodgkin said, that the squid is a very distant relative of man, our last common ancestor died several hundred million years ago, this similarity in behavior points to the survival value of the sodium channel in the animal kingdom. There is a sensible logic here, for living organisms, humanoid or cephalopod, have no choice in what materials to work with. Ions are an excellent, jury-rigged way of using electric current to send signals. What worked in the year 300 million BC holds up today.